Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
His name will appear first on the ballot for mayor when Chicago voters go to the polls on February 26th, but my guest's name might not be very familiar to some voters unless they're connoisseurs of Chicago politics. This week, it's a conversation with mayoral candidate Jerry Joyce. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guest is an attorney who's part of a political family well known in Chicago circles. The Joyces have been active in and around government for decades. His full name is Jeremiah Joyce II. He is a former Cook County State's Attorney. His father was the alderman from the 19th Ward in the late 70s, and then state senator for more than a decade, and an ally with members of another political family, the Daleys. Jerry Joyce's brother Kevin was a state representative, so politics and the law are, to some degree, the family business. How Jerry Joyce came to set his sights on the big office at City Hall, he'll have to tell us. Jerry Joyce, welcome.
Hi, Craig. Thanks for having me.
Well, so would a field of candidates with familiar names like Tony Preckwinkle and Bill Daley and Gary Chico and Paul Vallis and the like, what made you decide to try to move to the head of the pack?
Well, I decided to run for mayor several months ago, actually before Mayor Emanuel announced he was not running. So we've been out campaigning for several months, well before most of the people in the race. The reasons I've been out there that long is because of the state of affairs in our city. You know, I can tell you a little story that I was watching TV last year, and a host interviewed an author. Author had used to live in Chicago, and he asked him where he lived, and he answered by saying that his grandparents were lifelong Chicagoans. He was born and raised there, and his wife and he were raising their children there. However, he said it reached a point in Chicago where he had to ask himself and his family the question, are they doing a disservice by staying there? Was he doing a disservice to his family by remaining in Chicago and raising his children there? And he answered that by relocating to Nashville, Tennessee. I understand his concerns. So many Chicagoans understand the concerns of him. But rather than relocate, move away, I'd like to do something about that. And that's why I'm running.
But you haven't been in government or business to any extent. So several of your opponents have been in one or the other, some of them both. Rahm Emanuel's been in both. And he was not able to accomplish all he wanted to do. What tools and experience do you bring to the task here?
Well, I have not been in government. I think evidence shows that's probably a good thing. There's so many people running that have been part of the problem and not part of the solution. The state of affairs we're in now didn't happen overnight. It's been a long time coming. It's been based on or because of decisions made by so many people that are still around. That's why I'm for term limits. I don't think it's healthy for our city or for our government to have politicians and leaders that stay too long. So I'm for term limits. I have been from the get-go. I think not being in government, not having a career in politics is an asset in this race. I have had a career in a private practice and in small businesses. As you mentioned, also I worked at the state's attorney's office. So actually I think I am, in some sense, uniquely qualified for this job. I was born and raised in Chicago. My wife Janine and I are raising our four children here. We love this city, never considered living anywhere else. I've been involved in civic and charitable organizations throughout the city for a number of years. Chicago's a part of me. The neighborhoods are a part of me. I love it. I want to do something to improve it. And we have plans to help the city get back on track and keep it a place that people want to stay, want to relocate to, want to come back home to.
What has Chicago or what has Chicago city government been doing wrong up to now?
Well, we can start with public safety. This administration made the strategic decision to deplete the police department years ago. Numbers of officers are way down. Probably more importantly, numbers of detectives are way down. They thought they could do more with less, allocated resources elsewhere, and that was a bad decision. It was the wrong decision, and it shows by particularly the clearance rates, which are getting a lot of publicity lately. They're awful. They're disgraceful, and not. I'm not just talking about the murder and homicide rates. I'm talking about shootings, carjackings, shooting rates. Clearance rates for shootings. And let me be clear on clearance. We're talking about just identifying the perpetrator of the crime, not convictions. So clearance rates in cases that somebody is identified and arrested for a crime, and particularly for shootings, that is halved under this administration. We are now in the middle single digits. So if you want to do the math on the shootings and you say there's 2,500 plus shootings a year, and you know, extrapolate that out, we got 15,000 shootings over 6 years, and let's be generous and say 10% of them are being solved. Or if you want to use the total clearance rate, which is clearances over 2 years, not 1 year, we'll go a little higher. But in either case, we're in the thousands of shooters walking the streets of Chicago that have not been identified, have not been arrested. And I believe, in great part, that is due to the lack of necessary training in the detective division and the depletion of numbers there. And that is acknowledged by CPD and the detective division currently.
Mayor Emanuel has hired 1,000 more police officers in the last 2 years. And in fact, they've taken pains to prove to us that they really hired 1,000 more and that it wasn't just eaten up by attrition. And he also has expanded technology. I will have to assume that you think that's not enough.
The technology, expanding technology is great. I agree with you. I think you need to verify those numbers. But it's actually evidence of the mistake that they did make by letting the numbers go down so low. So the exact numbers, I don't know. We'll have to find out when we get in there. It may be enough, may not be enough. Certainly the detectives is not enough. And they're not claiming that the detective division is up to par to the numbers that should be there.
Now, you have said previously that the police officers are overworked. I know you talked about the detectives. They are overburdened and not solving crimes as much as they should or as soon as they should. But talk about what's happening to the police officers who are the patrol officers, the people who are on the front lines.
Yes, it's morale, as you're well aware, is probably at an all-time low on the police department. And part of it is because they are overworked. You know, police officers are missing their child's baseball games, their basketball games, after-school activities, family activities, because as a result of, once again, letting the numbers go so low, the administration had to make up with that by overtime, hundreds of millions of dollars spent on overtime, and that overtime being worked by overworked police officers.
First off, I should ask if more police are the whole answer. I mean, is that the main thing that is needed here?
Oh, absolutely not. That's just one component of law enforcement. I mean, of public safety. Law enforcement is one component. Well, let's stay on the police for a moment, because we have proposed community policing the way that it would be much more effective. You know, CAPS, community policing, whatever you want to call it. Too often it winds up being the red-headed stepchild of the police department in so many jurisdictions. Real community policing means officers that are doing the law enforcement are also getting involved in the community, not officers that are diverted and put out in the community to report back to the officers that are assigned to do more traditional beat work. So we propose to have a team of 8 to 10 police officers and one sergeant in each beat in the pilot districts in each beat for a period of 30 months. Currently, teams are not, there's no rhyme or reason. There's a rhyme or reason, but there's no consistency of them staying in the communities that they serve and protect. So we would like to experiment with this. We think we're going to have really good results. What's part of not the crime being solved is the intelligence gathering. Right now, there's a lack of trust, too far widespread in too many areas in Chicago. And a lot of that is based on crime not being solved. So police officers say witnesses won't talk to them. Well, they won't talk to them because they're not confident that they're going to apprehend the criminal or the gangbanger that performed the shooting, the crime, whatever it may be that they may be a witness to. So why would they put their own safety at risk, become a target for being a witness when they have no confidence? So I think if we can bring the clearance rates up, and we do that by better investigations, by having more intelligence, being out in the community, getting to know who the bad people are, who the good people are, where to go to for leads, how to, you know, that will go a long way to the clearance rates, which will then go a long way towards building trust between the communities and the police officers.
And you talked about training. You talked about training for the detectives especially, but you are not in favor of Mayor Emanuel's proposal for about a $95 or $100 million police and fire training academy that he wants to locate on the west side. Why not, and what are you proposing instead?
Well, I think everybody acknowledges the police department, Chicago Police Department, needs more training. Everybody, every police officer I've talked to acknowledges that, stresses that. And I am obviously in favor of more training. But a $100 million facility, given the state of the city's finances right now, is, I don't believe, the right way to go, especially when there's an alternative that we've come up with which can save that $100 million. As you're well aware, the administration closed 50 schools without any plan to repurpose them over 6 years ago. We have these vacant schools. The majority of them still sitting vacant throughout our city. They should have been either repurposed or bulldozed. There should have been a plan in place before they did that, because a school, as you know, is not just a place of learning, but very often it's an anchor in a community. And now we have these, at best, eyesores that have sat vacant in these communities that house them. Our plan, we've identified five vacant, shuttered schools, two on the west side and three on the south side, which can house the both police academy and the fire academy. Currently, we're paying $400,000 carrying costs on these buildings. They can be repurposed. Academies can be sited in them for less than $25 million. We picked these five because they are located in the federal opportunity zones, which is a newly created tax incentive program for investment in economically disadvantaged communities. These five are located there. Part problem investing in opportunity zones is there's a concern for safety. So now we're going to put a public safety use in a opportunity zone, and it's concerned about safety. So I think that will be a catalyst, a spur for additional investment. We'll save the money that would have been required to build the $100 million academy. We can still sell the police and fire locations in a transparent public process. I believe the city was going to allocate $60 million from the sale of land at O'Hare to the tollway towards this new academy. That can instead go to first responder pensions. So I think it's a win-win-win. I know it's an example of outside-the-box thinking that's required in our city in this day and age, and currently, particularly right now. And we have more plans like this coming down the pike that we're going to share.
Can a decentralized training complex like this be efficient enough, especially when we're starting to talk more about cross-training between police and firefighters? You're talking about distances between between the facilities, if somebody has to go from one to the other, couldn't all of that sort of add up to more time and expense?
No, no. Well, first of all, currently they're being trained in multiple locations. Police officers and firefighters that I've spoken to have no problem with going to, and the police department can do it any way they want. They can do in phases by location for training. They can do it in different types of training. But no, there's no problem with that. And when given technology in today that we have, there's no problem. And plus, you know what? I've talked to someone who spent a career training military officers, and he specifically said, give me a beach in Florida, give me a, send me to the North Pole. We can train people. Just give me the right people to train, I'll train them. Facility's not going to matter.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. My guest is Jerry Joyce, candidate for mayor of Chicago. I want to stay on public safety for just one more question, and that is the consent decree that has been worked out between the Illinois Attorney General and the city of Chicago is going to be in effect probably for whatever mayor, whoever is the mayor. Are there any particular problems you have with the consent decree as it is drawn up now? And, you know, if not already approved by a judge, nearly ready for approval by the judge?
A lot of the things in the consent decree are already operational. But yeah, I do have concerns, similar concerns that Superintendent Johnson had with the unholstering a weapon, the paperwork requirements. The concerns I have all go towards either cost or safety of officers. Anything that may cause the safety of an officer to be diminished, I would have a concern with. And those two specific things are the ones that I can share with you now.
The paperwork, police officers have complained about paperwork on things like the stops that they have to make of citizens and the reports they have to do. What is the safety concern about paperwork? And then, can you just talk a little bit about what the safety concern is for having to report when you unholster and point your weapon, which I think was those were the two dimensions. It wasn't just taking it out of the holster, but actually pointing it at someone.
Yeah, I guess I can answer both of the same. You don't want an officer hesitating when they're in a dangerous situation out of concern about documentation. What happens to that paperwork after it leaves that officer's required reporting? That's the concern that officers have. Is someone going to try and trick bag me because I reported it? You know, there may be an officer that doesn't pull his weapon 10 years on the force, and there may be one that pulls it 10 times a week or more. So is that going to be used against that officer that works in dangerous situations constantly? Is that paperwork going to be used against them in any situation? So,
but should the department know when there is an officer who is pulling a weapon maybe more than might be advisable given the kind of training that they've gotten?
They do know. They already do know. But where is that report going to? If there's a officers I've talked to, if there's a personality conflict, is there there's so much wiggle room in there and subjectivity. If it could be more objective, if it could be done in a matter, and I assume it's going to be worked out eventually, but those are my concerns.
Okay. Let's talk ethics. Because there's been a lot of talk about ethics lately. And I will stress at the beginning of this, nothing has been proven, but Alderman Ed Burke has been accused of using his position and power to pressure Burger King, in particular to use his law office for his property tax or for its property tax appeals and such. Should aldermen have outside jobs? And what lines would you draw to prevent abuse of those two roles if you would allow them at all?
You know what? I do not believe aldermen should have outside jobs. I believe it should be a full-time job. I think if you're doing it correctly, it is a full-time job. And I think it's well paid. I do not believe aldermen should have outside income. Outside jobs, I'm sorry. Yeah.
What about the other thing that flowed through that case, but many other cases, not just legal cases, but just regular business of the city council, aldermanic prerogative? Should an alderman have veto power over the things that come up in their wards?
Yes, I believe they should. I believe they're in the best position to make that decision based on the people they represent.
Now, the people who are arguing against aldermanic prerogative or wanting to limit it, and it's not just in the field of candidates, but some people on the city council, that's a big debate on the city council right now, suggest that that is an opening for abuse. That when an alderman has the power to stop something, that makes them all powerful in the eyes of whoever is asking for something, and that almost invites, they would say, either bribery or someone trying to cajole them into doing something.
I'd have to, that should be vetted, certainly, if that's a concern that it leads to bribery. But I mean, if it leads to bribery, you know, I think that something else is going to lead to bribery. You got to do the right thing. You know? I don't think that prerogative is the thing that's leading to the bribery or making somebody susceptible to it.
What about, well, you said you subscribe to term limits?
I do.
And is that for the alderman and the mayor?
Yes.
Okay. What about the proposals that keep coming up every once in a while to shrink the size of the city council?
Yes, I agree with that. I don't know what that number would be, but certainly we could get by with 25 aldermen.
The argument that when I hear an argument, the argument I hear the most often is that the aldermen are closer to the people, and that if you shrink the number of aldermen, that means perhaps response from the ward or whatever you want to call it at that time is slower because now they're dealing with more people. Could that pull people further away from the source of their services?
Well, I think so many the functions of an alderman have been taken over by 311 services and other stuff that city agencies have taken over. And now the technology that we have nowadays between computers and smartphones and cell phones, I think that there's a lot of efficiencies that are in place now that would advocate to a smaller city council. I don't think that I don't share those concerns.
Okay. We'll turn to finance for a little bit. You favor legalized marijuana and a Chicago casino to help with the city's pension debt, but that almost certainly won't be enough revenue. What else is acceptable to you and what is not?
Well, obviously our pension unfunded liability is a huge overhang on our city. We need to recognize that we got to this because of the leaders of our government, not because of the pensioners, not because of the police officers, not because of the firefighters, laborers, you know, city workers, municipal workers, teachers. They paid into their pension. It's not their fault. So we should not be talking about a constitutional amendment to short them of their pension or the possibility of allowing the city to go bankrupt to get out of our contract with them. When they started, we told them what to expect. In exchange for that, they made a promise to us. You know, there was no exception. Oh, I'm not going to run into a burning building when I get called to do my job as a firefighter. Or if there's shots coming out of that window, I'm not going to go through that door as a police officer. No, we cannot renege on our deal with them. In addition to that, we also need to recognize we're not going to solve this problem on the backs of residential property owners in our city. It's a huge number, no question about it. What we need to do is find alternative sources of revenue, give us some breathing room so we can grow out of this and govern out of it. But It's not going to be on the back of residential property owners. And we do have some suggestions and ideas, like the police academy. That's $60+ million. We have other stuff that sports betting is now allowed by the Supreme Court. We're in favor of a casino, as you indicated. All the revenue derived from that going to unfunded pension obligations. The casino should be sited in an area that can withstand or hold a whole entertainment zone. We've been in discussions with Great Lakes Coalition, Cruising Coalition. There is now cruising on Lake Michigan and the Great Lakes. That could take off. We've been in discussion with them. They'd be very interested in bolstering their presence in Chicago. We have a proposal whereby the Southworks site could possibly house a casino, house a port for the cruising on Lake Michigan, possibly have a water park there, bring maybe hotels there, have a resurgence on the southeast side. All that's additional revenue. That'll be long term, I get it, but it's a long term problem we're dealing with also. We have a proposal for perhaps increasing the passenger facility charge, dollars that wouldn't hit Chicagoans so hard. That would require some heavy muscle to get through the feds and the airlines. But everything should be on the table right now.
Except a commuter tax?
No, I think the commuter tax should be on the table. Okay. It's been discussed in years past, not met with a lot of success. But, we have to take into account what the business community is saying about it. But it should be on the table, no question about it.
We have about a minute left or so, but I want to ask one at least education question. You favor sort of a hybrid school board? I know there are so many proposals for it right now, but what do you propose for running the Chicago Public Schools?
The school board makeup that we propose is 6 districts elected, 1 representative each one, and 1 appointment from the mayor. I am in favor of an elected school board because of the lack of accountability evident the last 8 years at least in the current system, between the outrageous sexual abuse scandal that was allowed to go on so long. And you know what? People don't even understand. The school board was, if they were in the dark, they certainly were made aware of it back in January when the Tribune was asking about them. Not till May, when the story came out, did they do anything to address this or remedy it. It's atrocious. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Would the mayor's appointee be the chair of the school board?
No, not at all.
So it'll still be a voter there?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that is going to be the final word. I would like to thank mayoral candidate Jerry Joyce for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That is WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I will be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you will be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.